Once safely enclosed in the car and prowling away down the road from the shot-up diner, Anya turned to Lieutenant Tom.
Thanks for rescuing me. Again?
All part of the service, Miss Creed. That Georgie's always been way too full of himself. He's a bit of a bully, loves to throw his weight around, and has a lot to deal with, too.
He shook his crew-cut head.
You can get serviceable cops out of beginnings like that. A good one, I don't know about. Guess we ought to give the youngster a chance to grow up some.
Anya bit down hard on the urge to ask if Georgia Bell had bullied Johnny when they were kids. Instead, on the drive to the Troop G barracks on the east edge of Lawton, she gave the lieutenant a summary of current events. A considerably fuller one than she'd given a Bell, extending to the previous couple of days. At the station, she gave a videotaped statement and then filled out the usual reams of forms. When that was done, she went back to Ten Bear's office, as he'd requested. Tom was peering over the tops of his reading glasses at his computer monitor, as if whatever he saw there smelled bad. He waved her to a seat.
You report that little restroom encounter to the New Mexico authorities?
No.
Tom took off the glasses and swiveled to face her.
Your little playmates in there committed multiple crimes, including a little thing we call felony battery.
Outside your jurisdiction.
Well, I am sworn to uphold the law. And I've always gotten along pretty good with those New Mexico State Patrol boys and girls.
Well, I am reporting it. To you.
I'm guessing you don't want to pursue this?
Anya shook her head emphatically.
I've already had my face splashed all over the news too much because of my involvement with poor Paul.
He raised an eyebrow at her.
Okay, I'm a television personality. That doesn't mean I'm a celebrity or want to be one. I don't live for FaceTime. I work for Chasing History's Monsters because it's fun, it pays well, and I feel as if it gives me a chance, if not always a fair one, to shine the light of science and reason into some dark, superstitious places. In terms of the show, though, I'm just a minor and occasional talking head. That suits me fine.
For far more reasons than I hope you'll ever get wind of, she thought.
Fair enough.
Anya leaned back in her chair then and gave him an intent look.
So, Lieutenant, why didn't you tell me you were related to Dr. Watson? To say nothing of Johnny?
I didn't see it was any of your business.
He gave off none of the challenge that usually accompanied that class of statement. From her limited acquaintance of the man, she guessed he was capable of both perfect sincerity and total fraud. Whatever served his ends, as a law enforcement officer, or probably a Comanche.
Anyway, I reckoned you'd find all that out, and you did.
He studied her a moment. Outside, the day began to show signs of fading.
So, what'd you make of Johnny?
He's obviously an intelligent man. He certainly seems sincere in his convictions.
So he gave you that great white father crazy talk of his. I don't know where I went wrong with that boy. I tried to raise him with his head on face frontwards.
Does it ever occur to you, Lieutenant, that you might have?
He frowned at her.
You're a sharp one, Miss Creed. I see I better look sharp to make sure you don't slip one past this poor old lawman.
Nothing could be further from my intentions. Anyway, horse crap. Nobody ever slips anything past you, Lieutenant, do they?
Well, come to think of it, maybe not all that often at that.
I haven't learned much about what happened to Paul or what's going on in Comanche County, nor what they might have to do with each other. But I have a better idea how things stand.
I'd say so, given all the bullets crackling past your ears and all. Now that you've seen for yourself what the stakes are around here, are you sure you want to stick with it?
Yes.
She started to rise, then hesitated.
You don't believe it was Johnny's own people who shot up the Oklahoma Rose, do you?
No. I don't put much past them, don't get me wrong. But the Dog Society won't be mistaken for the Ladies' Aid anytime soon either, as you found out back in New Mexico. If I weren't an upholder of the law, sworn in all right and proper, I'd be tempted to opine they deserve each other.
Given her experiences, Anya would be much less tempted by that opinion. She almost hated to admit it, but she saw Johnny's point about his club's perspective. It was possible neither she nor her inadvertent hosts had handled things very well that night in the bad medicine.
I'll be in touch, Lieutenant.
One more thing, Miss Creed. Don't go thinking you know my son. Don't make the mistake of assuming you understand anything about him at all, even if he can charm a chunk of dead dog out an old snapping turtle's mouth.
I totally don't believe that's an authentic Oklahoma aphorism. I think you just made it up in hopes of making me throw up.
Well, don't want you spoiling the paperwork, Miss Creed. All respect, it messes it up so it won't hardly feed through the copy machine. Other than that, you are purely correct.
Through the gathering twilight, Anya ran. It soothed her. She needed to decompress and process, even if she couldn't fully give in to her feelings quite yet. Mourning Paul properly would have to wait until he was avenged, or until it became apparent it was beyond her ability to do so. She was on a back road through low rolling hills on her way back to the motel, which she guessed was a mile away yet. The wind had died at last. With the exertion, she was comfortable in her t-shirt and sweatpants in spite of the fact the temperature had dropped noticeably when the sun dipped behind the Wichitas 10 minutes or so earlier. Anya slowed to a stop. A dark-colored sedan was driving toward her along the road with its halogen headlights acting as weird eyes in the twilight. It was moving more slowly than the road's surface, rutted by spring rains, seemed to mandate. She stood by the ditch, frowning slightly as the vehicle slowed to a stop beside her. The window rolled down. A suit jacket sleeve and white shirt cuff came out with a pale hand sprouting from them like a lily. The hand displayed a photo ID with a big gold government seal.
FBI, Ms. Creed. I need to ask you to get in the car, please. We need to talk.
The federal courthouse in Lawton was a big yellow brick cube standing apart from other buildings in the downtown area. It was the sort of mountain-solid late 19th or early 20th century building they didn't build anymore, and consequently the kind of building with a weather-darkened brass plaque stuck on its above-ground cement foundation.
Ms. Creed, we have a potentially unstable situation here. We're going to need...
Special agent in charge, Lamont Young, was a big, blonde, bland man in a pale gray suit. Anya didn't know, and he didn't volunteer, whether he was in charge of the local Lawton office or of some task force sent from somewhere larger, presumably Oklahoma City. He interviewed her in a room with yellow-painted walls and white trim that smelled of old paint and the steam heat from an old-fashioned radiator under one lone window that was turning the place to a sauna. He perched his broad rump on the edge of a green metal desk and talked in vague terms about risk factors, with his hands clasped between his knees. Then he got down to asking questions. They were general. What do you do? What are you doing here? What was your relationship to the deceased? She sat in an uncompromising and uncomfortable wooden chair, gave simple, direct answers, and hoped they'd wrap it up soon.
How do you know John Jacob Tenbears?
Johnny? I met him in a bar. I didn't encourage his acquaintance.
That's putting it mildly, she thought, restraining a smile.
Do you frequent this bar, Miss Creed?
I've been in Lawton for 3 days. I'm not sure that gives me an opportunity to frequent anything.
You have spent only a single night in the Lawton area, Miss Creed.
I've had a kind of a rough time, Special Agent Young. Lots of travel, a close friend being killed, being shot at. I may be a little fuzzy as to details right now.
He nodded judiciously.
Are you investigating, Johnny?
I'm afraid I can't answer that.
Is he a person of interest, then?
I can't answer that, either.
Then what difference does it make what I know about him? Anyway, everything is in the statements I gave to Lieutenant Tenbears, including my account of what happened in the Oklahoma Rose.
About which Young, as yet, had asked nothing.
Presumably you know he is John Tenbears' father.
Yes. Do you feel that prejudices the lieutenant's ability to conduct an investigation?
Let us say the potential for a conflict of interest is there.
If you'd actually sit down and talk to either man, you'd find out how mistaken that is. If anything, Lieutenant Tenbears will go harder on his son than he would some random person.
Perhaps you believe that.
Anya reminded herself that getting annoyed with a federal agent was a waste of time at best.
Look, just what are you investigating here? The serial killings? The Iron Horse people? Some kind of events locally that might connect them?
Why would you suspect we're investigating local events?
I got shot at this morning with fully automatic weapons, which are extremely uncommon on the streets of this country, as well as intensely illegal. They were American-made, not Kalashnikovs, M16s. There's obviously some pretty serious game being played around here. I'd have to be a fool not to notice that.
Have you any special knowledge of what you're calling a game?
No. I'm interested in who killed Paul and who is butchering my professional peers. Lieutenant Ten Bears has asked me to consult on an unofficial basis from my knowledge not just of archaeology but of the profession of archaeology. I've done contract consulting with law enforcement before. I know the rules.
Are you aware that the penalties for obstructing a federal investigation are quite severe?
Yes, I'd pretty much gathered that.
It would be advisable for you to leave the area, Ms. Creed. You can only put yourself in the way of unpleasant complications by staying.
So, I'm not under suspicion of anything, then?
Why do you say that?
Isn't it usual procedure to tell a suspect not to leave the area?
Oh, I see. You are not a suspect, Ms. Creed. I do have the discretion to tell you that.
Good. Do you have the discretion to let me go?
Are you agreeing to leave Oklahoma?
No.
You aren't being very cooperative, young lady.
You haven't actually asked my cooperation on anything. You've threatened me. You suggested I go away. Not much scope for cooperation there. Now, may I please leave? I'm tired and hungry and want to take a shower.
Yes.
Anya got up.
Ms. Creed.
Yes?
You're making a mistake if you stay.
That wouldn't be the first one. Good evening, Special Agent Young.
The stars were out above the plains in force when Anya pulled into the gravel lot of the Bad Medicine. The glow of the neon sign did little to push them back as she parked facing the dirt road. She looked to confirm the presence of a certain distinctive red and cream Indian bike before she turned off the engine. The clouds were gone, but the wind bit deep as she got out of her car. She wondered how freaked the rental company would be if they checked the car's GPS records and found she'd driven back to the place where she'd left the last one, which presumably had been turned into a sieve by gunplay by the time they'd sweet-talked a wrecker into coming out to such dubious precincts to tow it away.
Take it up with Lieutenant Ten Bears.
The expected blast of warmth and noise hit her like a blowtorch when she opened the door. Anya could see 20 or so iron horses gathered there. Every face turned as one to peer at her. She was relieved to see most of the expressions were confused, somewhat. But then the familiar, lanky figure of Johnny Ten Bears unfolded from a table in the far corner.
It's all right. Come on in.
Johnny walked up to Anya.
Folks, this is Anya Creed. We met her the other night under kinda unfortunate circumstances. I talked to her today, right before that little shooting scrape you all heard about, and we agreed to bury the hatchet. She's good people. And she's with me.
Not knowing quite how to respond to the sheer force of masculinity the half Kiowa, half Comanche biker lord seemed to radiate, she shook his strong, well-shaped hand. It made her feel lame.
Understand, I can't order anybody around.
He smiled and leaned his head close to hers so his hair fell to either side of his face like shining black curtains.
These aren't the sort of people who take kindly to taking orders. I just try to set an example.
All right. Can we talk?
Figured you might want to do that.
Johnny straightened.
Come on to meet the tribe. This bear-shaped buck is Billy Whitebird, my right-hand man and the best wrench in western Oklahoma and the greater panhandle area.
Sorry we got off on the wrong foot the other night.
The grinning man enfolded her hand in one paw.
I see your face is healing up nicely.
Superficial cut. Head wounds bleed like crazy. Anyways, I always heal fast. And I apologize for my behavior. Sometimes I let a joke get a little out of hand.
Anya noticed that he still wore his colors over bare skin and got another glimpse of the intricate blue tattoo over his paunch.
Wondering why I wander around half-naked? I don't like to get too hot. Ed keeps it like a furnace in here during the cold months and an icebox when it's warm.
He followed them as Johnny escorted Anya through the crowd, introducing random people.
This is Ricky, Angel, Lowe's, Wahati.
Ricky was blade lean and had a gold hoop in his right ear. Angel looked almost comically like her name, with a soft oval face that probably looked years younger than she was. She wore a fringed black jacket over her colors. She also carried a dark blue Taurus 357 with what looked like grips custom cut down to fit her small hands. Beyond that, Anya lost track. As they navigated back toward Johnny's table, Anya met Eagle Eye, Satanta, Loco, and Lonnie Blackhands. And, of course, Snake.
I believe you two got acquainted the other night.
Her handshake was dry and firm and sinuously strong.
Pleased to meet you.
The pleasure's all yours. Anytime you'd like to renew our getting acquainted.
Now, Snake, is that a hospitable way to treat our guest?
If I were hospitable, would I be named Snake?
Everybody got back to what they were doing, talking and drinking, while Johnny took Anya to his table. Billy Whitebird followed. The chairs were old-style wooden saloon chairs. They were at least somewhat more comfortable than the one in Special Agent Young's office.
So, why the interest in us? Doesn't seem likely to be our charming company.
Don't underrate yourselves. I've had plenty worse receptions.
Billy looked at her close.
Reckon you have at that.
Billy took a drink from his mug. When he set it down, an unmistakable smell reached Anya's nostrils. He was drinking apple cider, not beer. In fact, now that she noticed it, she hadn't smelled alcohol at all since coming in here.
You've got to be kidding.
Anya leaned back and straightened in her chair.
I think she's caught on to our terrible secret.
It's no big thing. Some of our people are recovering alcoholics. The rest of us don't tend to drink much. Yeah, the stereotypical Indians and alcohol thing. Some people say we've got a genetic predisposition to it. I don't buy it. The scientific evidence seems sketchy at best. Anyway, booze and bikes don't really mix that well. That's a fact. Nor do guns and booze.
Anya shook her head.
You people are too much.
Now she's really catching on.
I thought you were hanging around to investigate the Skinwalker killings.
The media had dubbed the murderer the I-40 killer, since all his attacks had occurred fairly near the big west-to-east artery that supplanted the famed Route 66. The police were squatting hard on all details that connected the crimes to anything either supernatural-sounding or that would hint at an Indian connection. None too surprisingly, the Iron Horses seemed to have contacts of their own.
So, why the interest in us?
The Dog Society connection, mostly. Which was brought home to me pretty forcefully this morning.
Listen, I am really sorry about that. I had no right to expose you to that kind of danger, not to mention those poor people at the diner. I honestly had no idea the dogs would fly that far off the handle. I didn't realize just how bad things had gotten.
Why do you assume you were the target?
A local cone of silence seemed to descend on their little table.
Say what?
I've been attracting a lot of attention lately. That attack on your clubhouse I took for just bad timing on my part. Say, none of your people were hurt in that?
Nothing they won't get over.
Them dogs are planning some kind of surprise attack, we think. Once the guns started talking, they pulled back pretty smart.
Good. Anyway, I got a personal warning from them night before last.
Anya sketched out the restroom encounter in eastern New Mexico. Through her mind flitted the memory of wolf shadows at sunset, seeming to watch her. She dismissed them as irrelevant. Hallucination, mere coincidence, certainly nothing real. When she finished her account, Johnny sat back, pulling a long face and nodding.
Huh. You're taking this all pretty calm for a well-groomed, college-educated white-eyes chick.
Not the first time I've been shot at, with automatic weapons for that matter. Not the first time people have tried to jack me up in lonely places, either.
The two bikers exchanged glances.
I get the feeling you let us off kind of easy the other night, lady.
Yeah, well, no offense, but you didn't really trip my deadly threat detectors. Seemed as if you were just trying to rowdy me up some.
Billy made as if to slap Anya on the back, then pulled his hand away, as if suspecting her shoulder was forge hot.
Oh, baby! We got us a winner here, Johnny.
As long as you don't get to thinking you're bulletproof.
Believe me, I know better. Anyway, as to your conflict with the Dog Society here, it just seems there has to be a Skinwalker connection. First, it seems unlikely the dogs have decided to lean on me, however hard, just because I'm nosing around their turf. If they know that much, they know I am fixated on solving the death of my friend. Second, it also strikes me that if the dogs were after me that first night outside this place, they'd have come on way stronger than they did in that lady's room.
Maybe they put two and two together after you busted those bad boys up some.
Not impossible. But one common theme of the Skinwalker attack seems to be that the digs he targets are protested by native groups.
Nominally native.
Okay, but the dogs opposed the dig here, didn't they? Even if they weren't the ones picketing it?
Actually, they were. They have this kind, gentler public face auxiliary. Kind of like Sinn Féin to the old provisional IRA.
The creature, Killer, does seem to have struck a bit far afield. Coincidentally, in an area where radical violence is already taking place.
Johnny looked at Billy again, then back at her. He leaned forward.
Miss Creed, you don't know the half of it.
Anya, what don't I know the half of?
We have wind that the dog soldiers have cooked up a scheme to provoke a race war between Indians and whites. We think it's about good to go.
That's insane. Indians are a tiny minority of the population. They'd get squashed.
Maybe not. The U.S. military is spread thin all over the world. It's been weakened, materially and morally, by too many wars for no strategic benefit to Americans, or even any visible strategic point. The economy is struggling. A case for vulnerability could be made.
But would some kind of shocking terrorist strike be more likely to cause faith in the U.S. government to break down, or to invite hideous retaliation against Indians? And not just from the government.
Well, that's the question, ain't it?
We fear the latter. The dogs believe strongly in the former. They even believe other radicals, including white anarchists, will actively join them.
Johnny Ten Bears seemed a highly intelligent man, Anya thought. His manner was certainly calm and rational.
What do you think?
I think that the dog soldiers have talked themselves into believing there's a good enough chance of success to go for it.
That's a big leap for me to take. As I've said, I've been shot at before by some pretty blatantly bad people. And none of them actually thought they could take down the United States government.
Well, Comanche County has been just a font of new experiences for you, then.
Just do me one favor. Once you walk out of here, keep your head on a swivel.
Always.
Yeah, just like I thought. FBI's been tramping all over this place like yokels gaping at the world's biggest pig at the county fair. I do believe I see the print of Special Agent in Charge Young over there.
Anya doubted it. Admittedly, she hadn't been overly impressed with Young herself, but the Bureau maintained at least certain minimum standards of professionalism. But somebody trampled the University of Oklahoma dig and multiple murder scene well and truly. Her vote went to the national and global media before taking flight once more and swarming like locusts to the next showy catastrophe. At the moment, she and the lieutenant had it to themselves. Not even the Comanche County Sheriff was sending his deputies out to freeze and watch an isolated crime scene that had been so thoroughly picked over. The clouds threatened. Anya wondered if spring was always like this.
Don't report me.
The lieutenant pulled the collar of his bulky brown jacket higher around his neck.
But I could use some of that global warming they're always talking about on TV. This is more like the Ice Age.
Anya paused by the RV where Paul lived the last few days of his life. The RV had its doors sealed with yellow crime scene tape.
So I've been reading some of those reports you sent me.
Anya took off a glove and briefly touched the cold metal of the RV's side.
It looks as if people were reporting strange wolf-like creatures in the vicinity even before the attacks.
Yeah, not just the wolves. We got shaggy man stories, too. Not your usual Sasquatch or skunk ape guy in gorilla suit yarns, either. We're talking full-on wolfman stuff. Sent you those, too.
It's probably just people getting worked up and seeing natural animals.
Got no wolves in Comanche County.
Well, big dogs, then. Or even coyotes. Coyotes are everywhere now. You can't really believe there's more to these reports than that.
Tom stuck his hands deep in his jacket pockets.
I surely do love it when you city folk come out here and you know so much more about the land and the weather and the animals than us poor, dumb country folk who've only lived among all that our entire lives.
You don't think there's really anything paranormal going on?
Well, not necessarily. I don't discount supernatural stuff all the way, either. I've seen some things that aren't exactly dreamt of in your philosophy, Ms. Creed.
Wait, did you just quote Hamlet at me?
Nah, you're giving into that conspiracy theory stuff again. Well, I'm just an Indian country hick, too dumb to come in out of the rain.
All right, you can back off. I already know better than to underestimate you, but seriously? You think there might not be a rational explanation?
Seriously, I don't think we can anyhow, anyway, discount the possibility of a killer nutbag dressing himself up in a wolfman suit and skulking around the county. Seems I recently got me a report from this highfalutin outside expert, all college credentialed and all, mentioned skinwalkers are supposed to do that very thing. Even quoted a second expert to the effect that playing skinwalker might just be a perfectly natural thing for a sociopath to do. Of course, how you could call that a rational explanation is way past me. Ain't nothing rational about this perp.
Okay. You just have no mercy, do you?
I'd have to turn in my Comanche card if I did, ma'am. We got us a historical reputation to maintain.
This short, portly cop was proving himself a worthy foe.
Peace. We need to be on the same side.
Amen, sister. Preaching to the choir.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the time to meet with me. Can we get in out of the cold now?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask.
They started walking back to their cars.
So, do you have any actual evidence of any kinds of plots against the opening ceremonies for this new Comanche Star Casino?
Now, Anya, don't go getting yourself wrapped up in that kind of thing. It's pure trouble. And it has nothing to do with the deaths of your friend and his associates.
I seem to have gotten wrapped up in it regardless. Anyway, how can you be so sure there is no connection?
Anya stopped and squared to face him.
There's something seriously nasty going on here. It started long before the murders, and it seems to be ongoing.
And it's our business. Got nothing to do with this other thing.
How can you be sure? Is it just coincidence that the killer struck here, where tensions between Indian and white and Indian are getting wound so tight?
But he hit twice in New Mexico. And while there's always tension where Indians come in contact with white eyes or Mexicans, they're not having troubles across the state line like we are here in Comanche County. I'd know if they were, believe me. There's an old boy network for Indian lawmen. Yes, and women too. We keep in touch.
But he did come here, which is a lot farther from Navajo country than the Rio Grande Valley.
Now, you said it yourself. He seems to be drawn to these protests by professional Indians, wannabes, and loafs about the fort, like he's trying to show solidarity with them. Why make it more complicated than that?
Because it is more complicated. You feel it too. I know you do.
It always is.
Tom turned away. Tom turned back as they were opening the doors of their respective vehicles.
Just one more little thing.
This is where you warned me to steer clear of your son because he's pure trouble, isn't it?
This is where I warned you to steer clear of Johnny. He's pure trouble. Especially for a pretty woman such as yourself, if you won't take that as sexual harassment and all.
I have a pretty high harassment threshold, Lieutenant.
Well, somehow that doesn't surprise me.
I'm not going to get romantically entangled with your son, if that's what you're thinking.
You sure about that? He can be a pretty charming cuss when he sets his mind to it. Gets it from his old man.
He slapped himself on the belly.
Built the way I am, I had to be charming. Or I'd never got the chance to pass my genes along, as the kids say nowadays.
Given how slick the fat old bastard was, she thought it was a pretty plausible theory.
Of course I'm sure. Why wouldn't I be sure?
If you say so.
I do. But he may have information that could help lead to Paul's killer. I want that information.
I'm not sure that's the right tree you're barking up. One way or another, you want to be careful what might come dropping down on your head from the branches. I know you're not the usual college professor type, Anya, but there's trouble you can get into here in Comanche County I can't pull you out of. You may find trouble even you can't pull yourself out of.
Anya looked at him for a moment, then she smiled.
Thanks. I mean that. Thank you for caring.
It's my job. Not like you're gonna listen to me.
No. But thanks, anyway.
When she got back to the motel, her phone was blinking a red light at her.
Who'd be calling me here?
The room, all done up, neat and trim and nice-smelling, with the bedspread taut as a drumhead, didn't answer.
Well, one way to find out.
She laid her backpack on that immaculate spread and sat down on the edge of the bed by the phone, still wearing her coat. She picked up the handset, consulted the little chart printed on the phone, and punched in the code to retrieve the message.
Miss Creed, you don't know me, but we need to talk. I know what certain people are up to, okay? Johnny said I need to talk to you.
Whoa.
Anya gazed around as she walked through gates that had not been closed for a long time by the looks of them.
I didn't know there were any old drive-in movie theaters still standing.
She was talking to herself and to the stars, hard and bright overhead, although they were rapidly taking leave of her as menacing-looking clouds raced in and gathered from the north. The place had clearly stood derelict for years. The posts stood stripped of their car speakers in forlorn ranks, like bare stalks left over from some final harvest. The windows and doors of the former projection booth and concession stand were maws of blackness in the gloom. Their outer walls and the insides of the perimeter walls were crusted in spray-painted signs and slogans. She walked over to the concession stand. It was where her contact said he'd meet her. It was also an obvious ambush site. She stayed on her guard. She knew she wasn't going to delve deeper into the real reasons behind the Skinwalker murders or the Dog Society's mysterious vendetta for her without taking some real risks. She'd been forced to confront the fact. She came within 15 feet of the door and stopped.
Hey, I'm in here. Come on in.
Not on your life. I'm not going in there. You come out. Or forget about the whole thing.
Nothing happened. She started to turn away.
All right. You're smart. You don't want to walk in blind where you might get ambushed. That's cool.
Anya saw motion inside and slipped her hands out of her pockets. She found herself facing a man. Not a terribly prepossessing one. He looked to be Anya's age, a head shorter, skinny as a prairie weed. He had fox-like features and coarse hair, but his skin and eyes were light, and his hair looked brown rather than midnight black. He didn't twitch overtly, but never seemed to be at rest. He wore torn, stained jeans, pointy-toed boots, a grimy t-shirt, and a scuffed black leather jacket. He looked as if he'd seen one too many James Dean movies.
Your Creed?
That's right.
You can call me Two Hatchets.
It was a pretty grandiose name for someone who looked as if he'd need both arms to raise one hatchet, Anya thought.
What do you have for me?
Right to the point, huh? Yeah, I like that.
Anya turned to walk away.
Wait! Sorry! Sorry! Listen, the dogs are planning something. Something heavy, something bad. Something bad enough to send shockwaves circling the globe, you get me?
That's old news, Two Hatchets. Anyway, how would you know?
They use me for a runner, like the Dog Society. Do odd jobs, gopher, that sort of thing.
And they let you in on their planning sessions.
Yeah, imagine that. Two Hatchets, errand boy. No, they never tell me shit. But I'm like the janitor, man. Part of the furniture.
He pointed to the side of his head.
They forget I got ears, you dig?
I see.
Anya was skeptical, but it made sense. Back when people had servants, their masters always seemed to forget that they had ears, too. Service people still tended to be taken for granted. And she could definitely understand overlooking Two Hatchets.
So, what'd you overhear?
He shook his head.
Nothing specific. Just enough to know that what they're cooking up is big and bad. Super bad.
Again, old news.
Yeah.
He nodded as if trying to mix something in his skull.
I'm getting to that. They got a big meet set up. It's key. It's like the final step, man. The final piece of the puzzle. Going down tonight. Tonight!
He looked up at the sky.
Gotta hurry if we want to get there.
You'll take me?
Yeah. Shit, yeah. I'll show you the way in. I'm not going in myself. No way. But I'll point it out. And if you're batshit crazy enough to spy on those dog warriors, knock yourself out.
I'll do that thing.
Since there were no cars in the derelict lot, he correctly assumed she'd parked outside the graffiti-clad walls.
Wait,
He turned and tapped a pointy, impatient toe on the gravel.
What's in it for you?
Payback's a bitch, man. The dogs make me do their shit work, treat me like I'm nothing. I take you there, you get what you want, and then you screw those Dog Society warriors. Smash them to pieces!
That's the plan.
Two Hatchets guided Anya north of Lawton and east of Sill on Interstate 44. He had her turn off at an exit that led to a strip mall east of the road. Like the drive-in, it was abandoned. Big plywood sheets covered all the windows. Instead of public taste passing it by, though, it had fallen victim to a burst bubble.
Turn off your lights. Go around the right side.
Anya did as he said. Built in a sort of bowl, its drainage either had been poorly designed or was degrading from lack of maintenance. Parts of the parking lot were pools of scummy-looking water.
Desolate.
Anya wished it wasn't too cold to roll the windows down. Two Hatchets smelled as if he lived in his clothes.
So they're meeting here?
What? Are you stupid or what? You think I'd just have you drive in, just like that, if they were? They'd spot us and kill us both! They would!
Okay. I thought you might have me do just that, if you were trying something funny.
Everything I do is funny. So funny I forgot to laugh.
Leaving her to digest that odd rendition of the half-forgotten playground saying, her guide pointed.
Park here. South side. Don't go no farther. Park here. Here.
She guided the car against the side of the southernmost wall of the strip mall and stopped.
Now what?
Now we walk.
As he got out of the car, Anya frowned. Two Hatchets didn't look like someone who walked a whole bunch. He was dancing around in a little circle, puffing condensation like a steam engine.
Follow me, follow me.
Two Hatchets peered around the corner of the building, then sidled around. She followed deliberately. Anya didn't trust him entirely and wasn't going to, but given that Johnny sent him to her, she had to take seriously the prospect he might have useful information to convey. Two Hatchets crouched on the side of the small mall away from the highway, where the early evening traffic continued to hiss by. He seemed to be peering intently to the northeast, past the loading docks for the stores that no longer existed.
What are we looking for?
He pointed.
There.
Anya squinted. In a rising moon's light, she saw a black sprawl of what looked like a structure perhaps 1,000 yards away.
What's that?
Holly Hills Training Center.
Training for what?
Who knows? Who cares? Company building it went tits up right before it got finished. Contractors cratered too. Everybody just walked away, left it empty.
The Dog Society's meeting there?
He bobbed his head.
The place is built behind a ridge there, hides it from the highway. Company wanted privacy, wanted to block some of the interstate noise.
What about lookouts?
No, not this way. They're watching the road that leads from the west. Probably watch the back door east side just because. Otherwise, zip. Nobody ever comes here. Nobody ever goes there. So why bother? Not like they think anything can touch them anyway.
Looks as if we're in for a hike.
You are. Not me. Not me. No how. No way. I brought you here. I pointed you in the right direction. You take it from here. This is where I get off.
All right. I guess I can handle it from here. Thanks.
You be sure to tell Johnny I did this for you. You be sure. Tell him.
I'll do that.
20 minutes later, Anya was hunkered down in brush growing beneath a wood of small trees that stood along a creek running from the east down toward the highway. The south wing of the Holly Hills Training Center stood 100 yards away. A drainage ditch with low, grass-covered banks ran around its parking lot. It apparently emptied into the little creek through a small culvert 30 yards to Anya's left. Now she was looking at a loading dock. The center consisted of three main wings, strung out south to north and connected by covered passageways. The windows of this wing were covered in plywood sheeting like the ones in the dead mall. She contemplated how to get inside. She already took for granted the dog soldiers wouldn't have enough people on hand to secure the whole facility. Nor did she reckon the building contractors, stiffed and more than likely themselves insolvent, would have wasted much time and energy ensuring no one could get in the empty husk. It almost surprised her they'd bothered to put plywood over the windows.
What the?
A flare of white light off to her left made her hunker down instinctively. She saw the glow as a pair of headlights swung around the southern hip of the ridge that screened the center from the highway. She followed the vehicle's progress. The south wing quickly hid the lights from view. Anya remained crouched. She waited and watched. At the center's far end, several hundred yards off, she saw the headlights sweep across the grassland to the north. Then they cut off. Somebody was coming in, she thought. Right through the front door, apparently. Good to know. Anya slipped across the open space down into the drainage ditch. Smelling stagnant water, she leaped a marshy bottom and ran quickly up the far side and toward the buildings. In the several minutes she'd spent watching, she hadn't seen any patrols. It seemed probable that any sentries were concentrated farther north, and doubtless paying more attention to the newcomers than unexpected, uninvited guests. On impulse, she walked up the short flight of steps to the access door beside the main loading bay and tried the knob. It wasn't locked.
You never know.
She made her way blindly through the dark building until she heard voices. Anya waited, pressed in the shadows, as the voices moved from the front of the building toward the middle. They passed in front of her from left to right. There, they seemed to stop moving. Anya made her way carefully toward the sound of the voices. In short order, she saw the glare of some kind of artificial light shining from her right. She turned down a corridor. A few steps along, whitish-yellow light spilled onto the concrete floor from an open door. She crept up to it, crouched, then risked a 3-second look around. It was a small room, possibly a meeting or instruction room. A far doorway opened to a larger, central space. In that space lay a jumble of equipment the contractors must have left. Ladders, boxes, tangles of utility cords. She was surprised anything at all of value remained. A white tarp, or plastic sheeting, from the sheen she quickly realized it was the latter, had been laid on the floor. A number of men sat on crates and folding chairs. She slipped into the small room adjoining the larger one. The light from the main room alerted her to obstacles inside. Office chairs had been stacked in a clumsy fashion, desks piled one upside down atop another. She had no clue what they were doing there. Possibly samples delivered by a would-be vendor. The heaped furnishings made excellent cover. Bent low behind them, Anya worked her way close to the door to the big room.
I offer you, comrades, literally the opportunity of a lifetime.
The familiar voice tickled Anya's subconscious, but it didn't belong to one of the men who'd accosted her in eastern New Mexico. She knew she'd recognize their voices instantly.
Bottom line, what are we talking about here, comrade?
What we all dream of. Revolution. The end of the white capitalist hegemony. The chance for justice and peace.
How do that work exactly?
Anya peered around a desk. The speaker was a black man. The accent was pure New Orleans.
All we want's a chance to make a stand and take us some payback.
Anya realized there were at least 4 factions gathered there. She couldn't even see the dog soldiers, somewhere to her left, so she couldn't say for sure there weren't even more groups represented. She also made out, vaguely, shapes standing along the walls. She figured they were the security contingents for the various spokesmen. On the right side of the room, 3 African-American men sat, wearing what looked like a kind of civilian uniform. Dark glasses, jackets and trousers of some heavy dark fabric with a bit of sheen to it, over black shirts. They wore their hair cropped close and looked very businesslike. One of them was the man from New Orleans. To their left sat 3 Latinos, all wiry and bearded. They wore flannel shirts and jeans. To their left sat 3 more African Americans, 2 with shaved heads. The one in the middle had a Medusan tangle of dreadlocks. Even sitting down, he was enormously tall. Standing, Anya reckoned, he'd clear 6.5 feet easy. Finally, closest to Anya sat 3 young white men, skinny, nervous, hunching forward uncomfortably on their chairs. One had his head shaved, one had long red hair and a beard on his vulpine face. Their central figure had dark blonde dreadlocks and tribal tattoos encircling bare upper arms. Most of these men carried guns, some stuffed improvidently into waistbands, others in holsters. Anya suspected the three identically clad black men were packing under their rather loose jackets.
We, the Dog Society, provide the catalyst. More than that, the first strike. It will have aftershocks. I give you my word as a Plains warrior. And then it's up to you to keep the blows coming until the Empire crumbles.
The immensely tall, dreadlocked man waved a big hand.
What make you think you can down the Empire now?
When has the time been better? The oppressors fight dozens of wars, declared and otherwise, across the entire globe. Their enforcers are scattered to the four winds. Their warriors are exhausted. Even their most basic equipment is wearing out and not being replaced, while they pour billions of dollars into fantastic toys like stealth fighters and bombers that are no use to them in the wars they fight. The economy is a smoking wasteland. The pigs at home see their pension funds empty, their paychecks shrinking in value. The people groan for bread, yet there is no bread. Only trillions and trillions for the fat cats who oppress us all. The system is not just vulnerable to being toppled, my friends. It cries out for it. It requires only the impetus, the push. We, the Dog Society of the Numenu and their allies, will provide that push. Soon, the Empire shall feel its foundations crack beneath it.
What do you want from us?
Leverage. Force multipliers. Once we begin our campaign, and that day dawns soon, the more violent, the more widespread, the more additional shocks applied to the system, the greater our chances of crashing it. You all represent sizable networks of fighters for revolutionary justice. If you are concerned with the risks entailed in direct action, you needn't involve yourselves personally at all. I'm sure all of you are well acquainted with any number of hotheads you can persuade to take part in a rising tide of revolution.
The man from New Orleans nodded.
That's fine as far as it goes. But what's in it for us? For our movement?
The chance to strike off the chains of oppression, of course. To seize justice in your own way.
The dreadlocked white looked puzzled.
But wait. If we bring the government down, who will provide a social safety net?
The dreadlocked black guy eyed his white counterpart without favor.
I thought you boys were anarchists. Ain't you all about bringing the government down?
Real anarchism calls for the right kind of government. One that's big enough to provide for the needs of the people without keeping them down. And big enough to keep the capitalists from exploiting the people.
When we have broken the white supremacist hegemony, you and your communities will be able to define your own life ways and walk them as we Indians do.
So what you Indians are really saying is you're just looking to stop paying your taxes? How is the government going to provide jobs for my people?
Two burly men, dog soldiers with painted faces, strode into the circle of light. Between them, they dragged the slight form of Two Hatchets. He looked as if he'd been handled none too gently.
We found this creeping around outside.
Wait!
Two Hatchets winced as his escorts thrust him forward into the light.
I only did what you dogs told me to! I brought this spy, Anya Creed, right to you! She's probably here now, listening to you talk!
For a moment, everything stopped dead.
Did I do it right? Did I? I'm off the hook, right? Right?
It's a trap!
One of the first shots hit Two Hatchets in the left temple. The little informant fell on his face on the floor. Anya saw a bullet explode a lantern on a table. Liquid fuel sprayed over a man standing nearby, probably a dog soldier by his placement. Hideous light flared as he tottered, blazing, out of Anya's view. Men struggled. Bright gun flashes made the hellish scene more so. The smell of burning hair and skin made Anya's eyes water, stung her nose, and made her stomach churn. Time to go. The men were all fighting one another. Whether any or all of the dog soldiers' invited guests believed they'd been lured into a trap, once guns came out, it was every radical for himself. Wheeling right, she darted down the corridor. Ahead of her, the passageway ended in a space expanding to her left, with a large plywood-covered window beyond. She cut left at an angle across the open space, the size of a largish room, to a corridor she thought led toward an exit from the rear of the central building. she passed the black mouth of another cross corridor to her left. A white light speared from the direction of the exit and nailed her. Her eyes dazzled, she hurled herself left, letting herself leave her feet. Anya landed hard. She cracked her chin as she slid along the floor, with bright lights flashing through her brain that had nothing to do with the full-auto muzzle flashes dancing at her back. That brilliant beam, she'd instantly known, came from a ballistic flashlight clamped to the barrel of an assault rifle, a Car 4, judging by the horrific racket it made. The shooter presumably illuminated his target as much to make sure he wasn't about to light up some of his own guys as for help aiming. The fractional second pause as he processed what he saw gave Anya her life. At least for the present. Despite the pain hammering through her jaw and head, she forced herself to snap back to her feet and drive on. Behind her, somebody seemed to be shooting back at the man with the car, presumably a dog soldier guarding the exit. She ran into the front-to-rear corridor on the wing's far side. In a few steps, a plywood-covered floor-to-ceiling window loomed on her left. Anya pulled up short. She reached for the helm, and the sword appeared in her hand. Turning, she slashed a quick X through the wet, resistant wood. Shoulder first, she threw herself at the thin wooden sheet. She stumbled out into bracingly cold, blessedly clean-smelling air. Sword still in hand, she took quick stock of the situation. She stood on a patch of grass in a recess between the central wing and the northernmost one. She hugged the main building's wall. It was scarcely less black outside than inside. She had a good chance of escaping detection, even if somebody outside the recess looked directly at her. From the tumult of screams and shooting, the mobile melee seemed to be rolling north toward the parked vehicles.
Get your head out of here!
Two men appeared, running from the south. As one raced onward with the flopping, high-swinging gait of sheer panic, the other, a tall, spare man with a bandana tied around his forehead, stopped, turned, and opened fire with a handgun. A moment later, a pair of unmistakable dog soldiers dashed out in pursuit. Anya stayed hunkered down where she was. The commotion continued to the north of her. She heard shots that clearly came from outside on the far side of the buildings, the west. She guessed the delegates to the abortive war conference had more guards stationed out by their cars. They were now presumably shooting it out with their hosts. Quickly, Anya duck-walked to the corner, did three-second looks left and right. No one. As she started forward, she saw a revolver, a Smith & Wesson N-frame on the ground. She scooped it up as she ran for the rolling terrain east of the training center. The big Magnum might not be an ideal choice for follow-up shots, but Anya had no fear of its noise or recoil. If she found herself having to shoot, she'd get to cover and drop to the ground, aim, and make the last rounds count. If there are any rounds, she thought. She wasn't about to stop and swing open the cylinder to check, either. Nor was she going to crack the piece open on the run and risk the low-comedy catastrophe of spilling out however many live cartridges remained. Instead, she pelted flat out across the pavement, vaulted the drainage ditch, and was gone with the wind. Ranging wide to the east before turning north to where her rental car waited, she hoped, undiscovered and unmolested at the rear of the dead mall, Anya had plenty of time to consider what had just happened, and to parse through her options. She had witnessed an abortive attempt at coordinating terror strikes by terrorist groups from across the U.S. That these particular bands, or their survivors back at their home bases, weren't likely to want to collaborate with the dog soldiers did not mean that other groups hadn't already met and made terms. And that familiar voice made clear that the Dog Society plotted something big, and soon. Try as she could, Anya could not dredge up a face or name to go with that voice. She gave up the effort quickly. She had too much else to think about. It was cold. Indeed, the wind literally seemed to be sucking the very life from her out through her jacket. She was coming down from an adrenaline jag, which made her knees wobbly and set nausea seething in her stomach. But that was nothing she wasn't used to. She kept her legs moving by force of will, as she allocated at least some of her attention to negotiating the rolling prairie by light of a partial moon. Two hatchets had clearly been sent by the dogs to lure her in, most likely for capture, interrogation, and eventual disposal. That meant the Dog Society had well and truly targeted Anya Creed for death. They certainly showed signs of arrogance to a near suicidal degree, but she found it hard to imagine they'd actually told their snitch to lure her into the middle of their big top secret confab. She guessed her actual reception committee had either been waiting for her in another part of the training center, or perhaps were still waiting futilely somewhere else entirely. As for why Two Hatchets had done what he had, she guessed he'd either misheard his instructions and screwed up, or had decided to get clever, improvise, presumably impress his masters with his zeal and resourcefulness. And screwed up, fatally. From her brief acquaintance with the man, that seemed about right. Anya thought about calling Tom Ten Bears and tipping him off that the Dog Society was cooking up a big, steaming cauldron of evil. There was no guarantee he'd believe her. Even if the highway patrol turned out and found signs of a battle royal, it wouldn't necessarily substantiate any wild-eyed claims of a conspiracy to mount a nationwide insurrection. They'd probably think more in terms of some kind of major drug deal gone way off the rails. If the dogs picked up their casualties before clearing out, and she knew they would, there wouldn't necessarily be any evidence tying them to the massacre at all.
Am I just rationalizing because I really don't want to get hauled in for questioning on this? No.
Besides, what she witnessed was the sort of massive bloodletting that didn't happen in well-mannered first-world countries, especially the U.S. And when it did, she knew, the authorities clamped an iron lid on tight. So that nothing really happened after all, as far as the public ever knew. There was an even more compelling reason not to call the cops, she knew, but her mind shied away from dealing with it. Get warm first, she decided. Feeling half past dead from cold and exhaustion, she finally dragged her way back to her car. She made herself scope the scene from the night. She saw nothing threatening. When she came up to the car, she found no sign the doors had been jimmied, nor were people waiting in the footwells of the back seat to ambush her. She knew there was a danger that the GPS record from her phone would clearly show her route to the training center, not to mention her escape. So would the pings from the phone to the relay towers, if anybody bothered to check either. She knew every cell phone sold contained built-in spy and tracking devices for law enforcement. So she paused, regretfully, to delete the memory of her expensive third-generation phone, throw its shell in the dumpster of one closed-for-the-night business in a not-well-trafficked part of Lawton, and the SIM card, stamped into pieces, in another. She didn't dare use it again, nor allow it to record any more of her progress. Her real reason for not calling the police, and the biggest reason for not wanting to be tracked, was the sizzling and nasty suspicion that law enforcement in the region was itself infiltrated by the Dog Society. Part of it was hunch. Part of it was knowing more about how law enforcement actually worked than most members of the ever-trusting public. She was as sure that Lieutenant Tom Ten Bears was clean as she was that the sun would rise in the east in too few more hours. But it didn't mean everybody else in Troop G was. And thanks to the War on Terror, there was way too much interconnectivity between forces, departments, and agencies for anything resembling real security. It could be someone connected with the Lawton cops, or the Comanche County Sheriff's Department, or even the feds who used the information she provided to set the death squads on her trail.
I need a place to hide out. The dogs are on my trail.